hadn't seen that bumper. I didn't know when it ended. I'm Wendell. I'm the pastor at Pathway in the Melrose campus. I would like to think that I'm here today because Wayne is my closest friend and like a brother, but it's really because we have several crazy people out running the streets of Bowling Green. I'm not sure what number you call and get rescue for that kind of thing, but when should they be crossing the finish line? Does anybody know?
Before noon?
If like
they get before noon, they get their goal. 5 hours.
Okay, and it's at the Hot Rod Stadium. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you want to support them, that would be awesome. But they are crazy. Just would like to get that. You see where I am. No sweat. I'm not out of breath. They are. So it is good to be here. And Wayne is my closest friend, and he's like a brother. We've known each other since college days, Asbury College and seminary. Didn't really know each other that well, just knew we existed, basically. And we ministered together and kept in contact. But then when Robbie and I, this is my wife Robbie here. Good to have her. I got my sister here and my niece. Yeah. It's when Robbie and I moved here to Bowling Green that Wayne and I got really close. So we've been like brothers for the last dozen years or so. You've got a good man here, just saying. Want to talk about stewardship. And you saw by the bumper that we're talking about ownership versus stewardship this morning and kind of how that goes to trust. And we just recently bought a house. And we had been renting for years. We've been married almost 30 years. And we owned a house for a year and a half when we first got married. And we've rented ever since. And we just now bought a house. So it's been a long stretch of living in somebody else's stuff. And there's a difference in the way it feels when you are stewards of somebody else's property and when you own your own. Although we don't really own our property. I think BB and T does, but... anyway, we act like we own it. But there's a difference in that feeling, isn't there? I mean, those of you who've done both know the difference in that. And so we want to talk about stewardship today, but not so much about stewardship of the raw materials, because that's what you usually talk about. You hear a series on stewardship, and you think, oh, shoot, they're going to start talking about money. They're going to start asking for money. That's not where this is going to go. Or they say, be good stewards of your time. Or be good stewards of your talent. Those are the raw materials that God gives us. And we're all given different kinds and amounts of raw materials. But what we want to talk about today is being stewards of your dreams. Stewards of your dreams. When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up? Maybe I should still say, what do you want to be when you grow up? To all of us. You know, don't you have a certain kind of dream for your life, a certain kind of set of expectations that you have, wishes, hopes, anticipations? I kind of think this is the way it's going to turn out. This is the way I'd kind of like it to turn out. I hope it will turn out. I wish it would turn out. And so these are the dreams that we're all given. And today we want to talk about Joseph in the Old Testament. You talk about dreams. He literally had dreams, God-given dreams. When he was a kid, he was the youngest at that point, the youngest of a bunch of brothers. And all of a sudden, he starts having these dreams that he's going to be a ruler. He's going to be a leader. And he's excited about that. I mean, because that's who he is. That's his personality. Those are his character traits. And so, naturally, he's excited about that. So he starts talking to his brothers about it. Not a good idea, you know. Because the dreams included, you remember that, included his brothers bowing down to him and all and being subservient to him. So it's not good to share those kind of dreams with your older brothers. So they catch him at a vulnerable moment and they even toyed with killing him. But instead they throw him in a pit and a bunch of slave traders come by and they sell him into slavery. And he goes to Potiphar's house. Everybody knows the story. He's a really good slave. I mean, he's a good slave. So Potiphar puts him in charge of everything. He's a good-looking guy, and Potiphar's wife, you know, catches his eye, or he catches her eye, and she proposes, and he says no, and then she lies about it, and he gets thrown in prison. So there he is in prison, and he's faced with, as far as he knows, a life sentence. He doesn't know. He's still got these dreams rolling around in his head, but I thought, you know, this is what I thought, and here I am, you know, dodging roaches and rats, and this is not, you know, how does this go? And even in jail, he's faithful, and guys come to him and says, I've had these dreams. He said, I think I can help you out. So some of the guys from the palace tell him their dreams, and he helps to interpret their dreams while they're there in jail. But you have to ask yourself the question, what's it like? I've never been in slavery, and I've never been incarcerated. I've seen some low times, but never like that. But you have to ask yourself, what do you do with the dreams that are rolling around in your head when you find yourself in this terrible situation? But this is nothing new. Look at the Old Testament. I just want to touch on these real quick. Abraham, when he's younger, is given this dream. You will be the father of many nations. And he marries his wife, and they go for many years with no kids. She goes through menopause and gets way on up in years. He tried something with his wife's servant. God said, no, that doesn't count. So his wife goes clear through menopause and then finally has one child, father of many nations, one child in his senior years. Look at Moses, grows up in a palace, Pharaoh's palace, assumed he would live in royalty the rest of his life. After about 40 years, he's on the backside, the scripture says, the backside of the desert, chasing goats for his father-in-law. They aren't even his goats. He's chasing goats for his father-in-law. You look at David. Samuel comes and anoints him king. And for 40 years, he dodges spears and hides behind rocks, trying to dodge Saul, angry King Saul. Dreams, all kinds of big dreams put on hold. Look at the disciples. They're just mending nets and collecting taxes and doing their thing. The Son of God, not just anybody, the Son of God comes by and says, follow me. We're going to do some big things. And you get to the end and they've all failed grievously, betrayed and denied and scattered and doubted and, you know, just a pile of mush. Big dreams. Now look at us. So we want to talk about our dreams today. And it'd be easier to say, who here does not have a dream? You know, if you ask who has a dream, all the hands go up. But who does not have any kind of dream or expectation for your life? I mean, nobody raises a hand to that. We all identify with these stories that we have dreams. And we're kind of hoping they'll come true. So what do we do with our dreams? Are they our dreams? Do we own them? This is my dream. Or is it a dream that God has for me? And I'm just a steward of that dream. I just take care of that dream. I live out that dream. And so that's the question today. We're often asked, is this my money or God's money? You know, are these my gifts and talents? Are they God's gifts and talents? Well, now we're asking that same question with dreams. The dreams and expectations I have for my life, do I own them? Or are they God's dreams for me? And most of us in a church setting like this morning would say, why, they're God's dreams. They're God's dreams. Because that's the right answer, right? That would be the Sunday school answer that we would give. Yeah, they're God's dreams. But let somebody turn down the pressure. Let a crisis hit. Let some hard times come. And all of a sudden the reality hits us. No, they're my dreams. I own these dreams. Let somebody stand in your way. Let somebody tell you that you're not worthy of those dreams. Come up short when it comes to the resources to achieve those dreams. Doesn't matter. You come up on some sort of crisis that stands in the way of these dreams, and all of a sudden you realize, I own these dreams. And we usually do one of two things. When we're pressed on this, we either curl up in a ball And we feel sorry for ourselves, and we just say, well, my dreams will never come true. I'm just going to sit and do nothing for the duration. Some of us do that. Some of us just isolate and curl up and do nothing. But most of us say, we will make this dream come true. I will fight. I will overcompensate. I will overachieve. I will earn more than the average person. I will do more with the average person. So we ball up our fist and we clench our teeth and we say, I will make this happen. I will make my dreams come true. So they kind of are our dreams, aren't they? And really, living in our culture in America, we're told that that's the way you're supposed to approach it. You try harder. You reach the next level. You earn the next degree. You get the next promotion. You buy the next biggest, you know. Achieve your dreams, live out your dreams, pursue your dreams. And even in the parable that Jesus told about the talents, we'll even take that and say, yeah, isn't that what that means? That when you're given something by the master, you take it and make it more. It's my job to make this happen. It's my job to increase this. It's my job to make this a bigger thing than what it once was. You look at the parable, but and what else are you to assume? Because the guy that did nothing got in trouble. But the guy who increased the talents, you know, the two guys that did that, well, they get the reward. So you end the parable and say, there's our answer. It is the American way. Try harder. Achieve more. But read at the very end of the parable. What does the master say? He said, you have been faithful with a few things. That's what I was looking for. You have been faithful with the small things. Now I'll put you over more. Look at some of these stories. Look at Joseph. He was faithful with the little things. No, I'm not going to go to bed with you. You are my master's wife. I would not sin against him. I would not sin against God. In jail, interpreting the dreams for the guys from the palace. Was it the candlestick maker and the baker? I forget who it was. But anyway, he interpreted the dreams for them. You look at Moses faithfully tending his father-in-law's flocks. You look at David taking care of his men for 40 years. Twice he had opportunity to kill Saul. Remember that? Two times. And he said, no, I will not take the life of God's anointed. He was faithful in the little things. Even the disciples, they get to the end of their rope. They've done all these things that make them feel like failures, but they have been trained for 3 years, and Jesus goes away and he says, go and wait. But we know all this stuff. We heard the Sermon on the Mount. We had the bread multiply in our hands. We've seen all these miracles. We can go out and tell people about you. No. Go wait. They were faithful in the little things. They went and waited. So what's that look like? What's it look like to be faithful in the little things? If God gives us these big dreams, and they're God's dreams, I can either fight to make these dreams come true, or I can simply be faithful in the little things that are part of God's bigger dream. So what does that look like? It's pretty simple. It's not complicated at all. It's doing the next right thing. Just do the next right thing. And for me, I'm just telling you my story, the next right thing is simply loving the person in front of you. It's that easy. That means the person at Walmart. That means the person who pumps your gas. That means the person who collects your garbage. It means everybody. Every single human encounter you have in life, that is your next right thing. You love on that person. You're faithful with that moment. You're good stewards of that moment, the little things. I've kind of wondered, how much time do I have? What time do we? Okay. I kind of wondered whether I should tell some of my story. I don't know. It's not down in my notes. But I kind of wondered whether I should tell some of my story. My sister's here. I've got four sisters. This is the only one that talks to me. That's why she's here. But I was raised in a real high-powered home. Our father was a minister and eventually became a bishop. And whether we would want to admit it or not, he was probably a male chauvinist, so daughters really didn't count. So I was his only shot. I was his only son. And when he found out I was going to become a minister, he was like, okay, let me make you a clone of myself. I've got visions and dreams for you. When I was a little boy, I knew that God had something for me. I had dreams that God had something for me to do. And then I had a father who had dreams. And the two didn't match up. The two weren't the same dream. So I lived my whole life with a father who told me, you will never be good enough. You will never be smart enough. You will never be quick enough. You will never be good enough to achieve the dreams that I have for you. So I didn't curl up in a ball. Remember I said that was one option, to curl up in a ball and feel sorry for yourself? I didn't curl up in a ball. I clenched my fist and I set my jaw and I said, I will show you. I will show you what I can do. So everything I ever did, I overachieved at. I had to be the alpha in everything. I was in a lot of rock bands. I loved to play rock and roll. I had to always be the alpha in every rock band. I learned how to shoe horses. I had to be the best horseshoer there ever was. I learned how to build fences. I had to be the best fence builder there ever was. Anything I did, didn't matter. In school, I compared my grades to my father's grades. I went to the same college, or same seminary that my dad did, and I kept track of my grades and kept track of, I had old transcripts of his, and I thought, So everything in life was me trying to achieve my dreams that were really God's dreams. And so when I became a minister, it was all about you got to grow your churches big, lots of people, good budget, got to be popular, everybody's got to like you. You do things to make people like you, and you know. So I worked and I worked and I worked and I worked. And my life became more and more of a mess. I became more stressed. I had panic attacks. I had rage and I had anger. I had all kinds of addictions. I just was a mess. I struggled with depression, long bouts of depression. Never showed anybody that. My wife saw it a little bit, but I kept it all covered. Didn't let anybody see it. Well, finally, the last church we were in, we were invited to leave. I associated with people in the community that the church didn't like, and so trying to help them, but so we were asked to leave. So we wound up here in Bowling Green, literally without a job, a house, anything, just wound up here, and stumbled into Broadway and found out they had this thing called Celebrate Recovery. And so we thought, well, shoot, we're used to going to church in the evening, and it's the only evening service they have, so we'll go. So we went, and we never left. We were there for a while, and I got involved in 12-step groups, and I started making self-discoveries. And I realized that my dreams were really God's dreams. They didn't belong to me. They belonged to God. And I realized that it wasn't my job to be a big person or a famous person or a powerful person or a wealthy person or an influential person or anything like that. That wasn't my job. My job was just to simply do the next right thing. And so in Celebrate Recovery, which has now become Pathway, my strategy just became love the person in front of you. That's it. Love the person in front of you. That's the next right thing. That's the big dream. Just every moment, every encounter. And so now when they get me every year and grill me, the senior staff, you know, what's your strategy for Pathway? What are you going to do? And, you know, and sit across the table from them and I'll say, to love the person in front of me. No, what's your real strategy? You know, what's your long-term goals? Love the person in front of me. That's it. And what I'm realizing is that now I'm really seeing my dreams come true. Now I'm seeing that I'm part of God's bigger dream, and they're coming true. They're not hopes and wishes and expectations. They're coming into being. So we're all stewards of some sort of dream. You know, what do you see your life as? What do you want your life to be? And you can either fight and say, I'm going to make it my dream and I'm going to make it happen the way I want it to. Or you simply say, I'm just going to do the next right thing. I'm going to love the person in front of me. I'm going to be a good steward of this moment, this person, this encounter. Because this is part of something far bigger. When Joseph's brothers came to him at the end of the story, do you remember that? Their dad died. And so they figured, oh, no, it's it for us. He's going to kill us. Daddy's gone. We have no protection left. He's going to kill us. So they all gathered around Joseph, second in command, vice president of the nation. They come to him and they say, okay, now's our day of reckoning. We know we're fixing to get it. Are you going to kill us? And he said, oh, no. No, not at all. Said, you don't realize this wasn't about me and it wasn't about you. This was about God's dream to save a whole bunch of people. He didn't want them to starve to death. And so I played my part in the dream. You played your part in the dream. We all played our part in the dream and stored up a bunch of corn and grain so that we can live through the years of famine. This is God's bigger dream. I was just part of it. I'm not important. He didn't flash his Pharaoh badge. He just said, I'm just part of the big dream. God has a dream. I know you've heard that. I know you have because I know who your pastor is. God has a dream, and we can be part of that dream. And you're part of that dream by just simply doing the next right thing, by loving the person in front of you. God, thank you for being here with us. Thank you for the dream you have for us.